Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with my friend Robert Ellsberg, author and editor, publisher of Orbis Books. We're hoping this will broadcast at the beginning of the new year, so Happy New Year, everybody. This is a project of BeatitudeCenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So let's begin as usual with a little prayer. So I invite everyone, wherever you are, just to take a deep breath and just to relax and to recenter yourself and enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally and everyone everywhere. And let's welcome the risen nonviolent Jesus here with us. Just take a moment to ask for whatever graces we need to follow the nonviolent Jesus ever more faithfully in this new year and to do God's will. God of peace, thank you for all the blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus, as we look at the lives of the saints and to do our part to work for a more nonviolent, more just world. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, heal us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will and to do our part to help end poverty and greed and war, racism, injustice, and nuclear weapons, environmental destruction, and fascism, that we might be your holy beatitude people, peacemakers, who welcome your reign of universal love, nonviolence, and peace on earth. In the name of the nonviolent Jesus, amen. So to all the listeners, it's a great blessing to introduce you to my friend and to welcome here today Robert Ellsberg, one of our best spiritual writers in the country, the publisher and editor of Orbis Books, a legendary champion of Dorothy Day and many other saints, to speak about his latest book, this massive volume 2 of Blessed Among Us, a collection of writings for each day of the year about a few legendary saints, which was recently published by Liturgical Press. So Robert Ellsberg is the publisher and editor, as I said, of Orbis Books and the author himself of many award-winning books, including All Saints, a massive collection of reflections on saints, prophets, and witnesses for our time, Blessed Among All Women, The Saint's Guide to Happiness, and A Living Gospel, Reading God's Story in Holy Lives. From 1975 to 1980, he was part of the Catholic Worker community in New York City, where he served as managing editor of the Catholic Worker and worked closely and became friends with Dorothy Day. He has since edited 6 volumes of her writings, including Dorothy Day Selected Writings, The Duty of Delight, The Diaries of Dorothy Day, All the Way to Heaven, The Selected Letters of Dorothy Day, and Dorothy Day Spiritual Writings. If you don't have them, get all of them and read all of them. He has written and edited many other beautiful volumes, including with the great Sister Wendy Beckett, Dearest Sister Wendy, A Surprising Story of Faith and Friendship. His latest book here is a companion volume to Volume 1, Blessed Among Us, which offers an amazing, inspiring collection of the cloud of witnesses that surround us. This big book is full of marvelous, wonderful stories, just as Volume 1 was, and just as his best-selling historic book, All Saints, was. As you probably know, Robert is the son of the legendary Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers and became one of the leading voices against war and nuclear weapons. Robert is also part of bringing out a beautiful new collection in this new year about his father's writings. At Orbis, he published, well, he changed the church, in my opinion. He published Gustavo Gutierrez, Romero, Dorothy Day, Merton, Daniel Berrigan, Henry Nouwen, Joan Chittister, Joyce Rupp, James Caan, and even many of my books, including my recent commentary, The Gospel of Peace. Robert is one of my best friends. We traveled memorably together to El Salvador for Romero's beatification. So, Robert Ellsberg, welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast.
Thank you so much, Sean. I'm really honored to be here with, in the company of so many of the people you've interviewed in this podcast.
Robert, I have no idea where to begin to ask, because as you look at this massive new book that you've just written, it's overwhelming. And this isn't even your first one. You know, if you start with All Saints, it's overwhelming. But let's start there, which a book which was a huge bestseller. And now this is my impression, but many thousands agree. It seems that overnight, that historic book, I think in the late 1990s, became a bestseller. And after hundreds of years, really and truly, put saints back on the map, back in the center of the culture, in the church. Then you started writing daily profiles of saints for the little monthly pamphlet, Give Us This Day, which were first collected into Blessed Among Us, Volume 1. And now you've published a second massive Volume 2, Blessed Among Us, with all the latest little segments about the saints that are in Give Us This Day. But my take has always been, and I've said this many times, you have gone farther than the famous Butler himself who did the four-volume Lives of the Saints. Anybody in a religious order, you know, when I entered the Jesuits 400 years ago, they were there on the shelves collecting dust for like 300 years. But now you've gone way beyond them. So tell me, how did you get interested in the saints and writing a massive volume, All Saints, and now two more volumes?
Well, since you talk about the influence and impact of All Saints, maybe I'll begin there a little bit, because when I wrote that book, it really came out of my own heart and my life and my, you know, kind of experience. But I really had no idea whether anyone else would be interested in it at all. And so I really was almost surprised by the response, which was very, very strong, very positive, whether it brought in a whole new era and appreciation for the saints, I don't know. But I think it is true that a lot of people raised on the kind of traditional stories of the saints, even if you read in Butler's Lives, they're mostly from, you know, hundreds of years ago, or if not longer. And they tend to be, even though they're very well written, kind of stereotypical. And they kind of present this person as, okay, this is what a saint is. And you don't necessarily know how that relates to you, because you're not like the founder of a religious order or a martyr or a bishop or something like that. And so a couple things were different about mine. One, first of all, my selection was kind of guided not by starting kind of deductively with here's the saints and here's why you should be interested in them, but more kind of raising questions about what is the kind of spiritual need of our time, which might be different from, you know, 500 years ago. And who are the kinds of people who relate to that or respond to that? And some of them might be, many of them, official canonized saints, even doctors of the church, and going all the way back to the first centuries. But I thought there were many people of our own time. So on the one hand, I wanted to kind of bring a different way of looking at the saints, to show them as human beings who responded in their own time to the kind of questions and challenges that they encountered. And many of them had to kind of invent a new vocation or a new way of following Christ, because the available options of their times didn't really satisfy them. That's especially the case for women, who were always kind of transcending the given boundaries and kind of being trailblazers. But the other thing I wanted to do was to expand people's kind of conception of holiness itself, because to not just identify saints with those who've been canonized, which after all are just the kind of tip of the iceberg. The Feast of All Saints on November 1st remembers all of the holy people whose holiness may be known only to God alone, or to their family or their neighbors. And certainly they don't have a religious order who, you know, has the resources to press for their canonization. So the canonized saints are not the total of the saints. Those are just very specific, exceptional people that the church has, through a very complicated process, selected and held up as reliable kind of models of Christian discipleship. But I wanted to raise the question, aren't there all kinds of other ways that people who are not candidates for canonization have in their own way lived lives of the Beatitudes, whether, you know, their poverty of spirit, or the merciful, those who mourn, peacemakers, etc. But that includes also kind of visionaries of different kinds, mystics, artists, writers, poets, Now, where did that come from for me? Well, I was not raised in the Catholic Church. I was raised in the Episcopal Church. I didn't really know very much about saints. But I was always fascinated by heroic moral witnesses. And I think the first, you know, saint that I really knew about was St. Francis. And I came across the Little Flowers of St. Francis. And it was the first time I had this idea that, oh, wow, being a saint is like somebody who reminds you of Jesus or somebody who really tries to follow the path of Jesus, you know. And I, even at that time during the Vietnam War, I saw that in many people all around me. I was inspired by Gandhi and his followers. I was inspired by Martin Luther King and people in the civil rights movement. I was inspired by young men who were going to prison for refusing to cooperate with the draft during the Vietnam War. That actually led me to leave college and go to the Catholic Worker. We'll talk about that maybe, where I worked with Dorothy Day for the last years of her life. I wasn't drawn by her Catholicism, which I didn't really know that much about, but more because she seemed to me like a modern follower of Gandhi. Eventually, I did become a Catholic, and one of the things that really influenced me was learning about saints, and Dorothy Day had tremendous commitment, devotion to saints, but not just as people on a pedestal and not just sort of heavenly patrons, but people who were models of inspiration. And then she didn't just stop with them, because she had her own cloud of witnesses that did include civil rights and labor, leaders and martyrs, writers, philosophers, and more obscure, humble people that people might not even know about. And so that was really kind of what inspired this idea that I had of doing a book that would, it was sort of be like Dorothy Day's conception of a book of saints, you know, and not pretending that they're all canonized or could be canonized, though a lot of them have been even since I did that book. They included people I knew and people who had really inspired me. And so it was easy for me to write about those stories because they were people in my own life who'd had a tremendous influence on me. So it was then years later, I thought maybe I was done with it then, until Liturgical Press approached me and asked me if I would contribute something in that same spirit to their new journal, Give Us This Day, which comes out every month. And so I had a 2-year contract to do that, just writing one of these entries, Blessed Among Us, for every day of the year. And now it's 14 years later, and I'm still doing it. And I've written about 1,400 of them.
Wow.
And those are the stories that make up these two volumes, Blessed Among Us and the new volume 2 that's just come out.
Thank you, Robert. So, you know, it was so shocking when All Saints first came out in the late 90s, because almost all overnight, you're seeing all these beautiful, great people of all different races and varieties. They're all clearly saints. So in your book, you might have St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, St. Benedict, and then there's Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, of course. Or, you know, Steve Biko and Archbishop Tutu and John Lewis, along with Merton and Dorothy and Romero and Dr. King. I wondered, before we get into your new book, if you could say a word about holiness, because it's so interesting that you were talking about that. I know this is, it's almost a silly question to say, but what are the qualifications of a saint or holiness? And, you know, you put it so simply, like, oh, someone who looks like Jesus or follows Jesus. No, that's really helpful, really, in the end. It's not a self-righteous thing, that's for sure. But, and also, Robert, I wonder if you could say something. Now, this, just forgive me, but here I invoke your beloved father, Daniel Ellsberg. Mm-hmm. In an age where we're on the brink of nuclear destruction, catastrophic climate change, global poverty, and permanent warfare, I think holiness is dangerous. It's a threat to the culture of violence and war. Jesus was killed by the empire. And you know, I see Dorothy Day and the Berrigans, our friends, as a threat to the culture of war. I wonder if you might reflect a little bit about that, too.
Well, you know, I think there's something to that. There are obviously saints, and there's models of holiness that don't necessarily challenge the system. But I think then there are also kind of, you know, the mystics, and there are, you know, let's say like the women, the Beguines of the Middle Ages, who who kind of charted this independent model of religious life, not in an enclosure and not really under the supervision of a bishop or that sort of thing. And they were very threatening to the church of their time and were really mercilessly persecuted. So there are those kind of examples of people who are not necessarily social or political, you know, radicals, but just by kind of trying to live in simplicity, live in a spirit of peace and nonviolence, live in a spirit of recognizing Christ in their neighbors, that does, you know, deeply challenge you know, the values of a you know, mercantile or capitalist, you know, kind of system, or the power of the state, or the claims of an idolatrous totalitarian state, because it's people who are standing up or affirming some idea of truth that is beyond the power of those in charge, you know, and that goes all the way back to Herod and the Gospels and Caesar. So yeah, I think there's something to that. On the other hand, I don't want to say that they're all just sort of troublemakers. A lot of them, of the people that I include, are people who give us access to some kind of sense of beauty, you know, or truth, or goodness, that doesn't just challenge the system, but inspires us to want to be more like that. And I think that is one of the characteristics or qualities that I'm trying to communicate. I think that we are shaped very much by what attracts us, what we love, what we pay attention to. And so it makes a great deal of difference what we pay attention to. And most of the kind of examples, or the people who are in the news all the time, are not really very attractive or admirable people. In fact, sometimes they're people who represent the worst human qualities. And so to call attention to these kind of people who walk among us, you know, and show us a different kind of way and call us to a better path, not all of them Catholic, not all of them Christian. That's also one of the kind of subversive things maybe that I did in the book. But by not calling it just saints, you know, by saying saints, prophets, and witnesses for our time, I think that I, you know, point to this idea that we can be inspired on our path by people who don't necessarily share, you know, the same doctrines that we do, but also this idea that all who kind of pursue truth, all these different ways converge. The kind of separations, boundaries that we draw in this life, this world, don't exist in heaven.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm speaking with Robert Elsberg about his big new book, Blessed Among Us, Volume 2, Day by Day with Saintly Witnesses. If you haven't got it, I highly recommend it. Get the first big book called All Saints, then the first volume, Blessed Among Us, Volume 1. This new one, a beautiful cover with icons. It's almost 800 pages. It's also a great book, all three of them really, to give out as gifts. Robert, there are way too many historic saints and figures in this book to talk about. And the thing that struck me first when I got my copy was, it's such an antidote to the bad news that we read about every day, or the people who are hurting people that we read about. And I could read through the list of table of contents, and it would be so astonishing. But I sort of think, you know, this is to make you laugh, but I dare not say it, but it's too late. It's sort of like the opposite of People magazine, you know, which is the culture. Here, look at all these people. They made it in the world. Yeah. This is the people who made it in heaven. And these are ones we aspire to. And these are books to have by your bed for the rest of your life, because you just feel better reading about them. Wow, that guy did that. She did that. Mm. I can do what I'm doing. Now, here are the ones, as I kind of glimpsed through it, that I just thought to mention to give folks a flavor, and I'm going to ask you to tell me about which the ones that inspire you. But here are some names, just random names I picked to show people. Albert Camus, Rachel Carson, Ben Salmon, who's the historic figure against World War I on the grounds of the nonviolence of Jesus, Diana Ortiz, our great friend, Jane Addams, Richard McSorley, my friend, Leo Tolstoy, Eddie Hillesum, Gene Donovan, your beloved friend, Wendy Beckett, Danilo Dolci, who's my great friend, the kind of Gandhi of Italy. I knew, I think, 25 of them, and I know you did too. So tell me about a few of the saints in this new collection who inspire you personally, especially in this terrible time under that we're all going through.
One of the things about the second volume, and probably why you know a lot of these people, is because in the second volume, these are a lot of people I've written about just in the last, you know, whatever it is, 7 or 8 years or something. So a lot of people who died in that period.
Yeah.
So that includes a lot of people that we know, including some of my authors, you know, not just the founders of religious orders and that sort of thing. So there's quite a lot. Yeah, no, I know a lot of them. I know were people that you were very close to, Tutu and Desmond Tutu. Excuse me, James Lawson and John Lewis and people like that. That I admired from afar, but without ever having a chance to meet. And then there are people who, you know, did intersect with my life and yours too, like Thich Nhat Hanh, or my very good friend Jim Forrest, great peacemaker, Catholic worker, one of my authors of many books on peace and nonviolence. I know you were very close to Paul Farmer, and I published him and got to know him. One of the remarkable people we've ever met, probably.
Yeah,
total genius.
Yeah.
Who had, you know, this fantastic education, but which he used entirely to bring healing and health to the poor, the poorest of the poor, and to say, you know, to step out and you talk about a kind of a challenge. This idea that we have, and there's so much debate about healthcare and insurance now, but this idea that we have here that healthcare is a business, you know, and that it's there's money involved and whether you can afford it and all that kind of stuff. This idea that healthcare should be a human right, you know, and the way that he poured himself out like that is just remarkable. Or Mr. Rogers, you know, Fred Rogers.
Yeah.
Now there's somebody, again, you look at somebody who is a subversive figure, you could say, in the sense that he just embodied this gentleness and said that instead of cartoons with, you know, characters hitting each other over the head with frying pans and stuff, what if you expose children to kindness and gentleness and help them deal with their feelings and to be friends with people who are different from them and all that kind of thing. And that was for him, you know, consciously a ministry because he was, you know, went down to seminary and studied, you know, for, ministry. And discovering kind of children's television, that would be his ministry. I was able, some of these people just at the last minute who died as we were finishing the book, and I dedicated the book to Pope Francis. He inspired me in just more ways than I can say. I think he was one of the, it was A. Correa, the Jesuit martyr in El Salvador, said that in Romero, Christ passed through El Salvador. I really felt that was, you know, what we experienced with Pope Francis. You know, that he brought the gospel to life in a new way through showing that a church leader is not just concerned with orthodoxy and doctrine, but with mercy and with concern for the poorest and for peace and for refugees and, you know, all this kind of thing, and just his human qualities and his openness, you know, I probably influenced me more than anybody in this whole list, and I dedicated the book to him. And another person I added just at the very end, and I sometimes these people, if they're not really obvious, I have to get kind of permission from liturgical, but I said, I'd really like to write about Alexei Navalny, who is the Russian dissident who died in Siberian prison camp. Now, here's a guy, and it was only when I read his journals that were published after his death and he wrote from prison that I realized, you know, that he was really a person of faith. And he said that it's very different to go through this kind of, you know, ordeal if you're a believer, if you believe that, that Christ is with you. But here's a guy who, you know, was, he was a reformer, but he took on corruption in the state, and he posed a tremendous threat to the Putin regime and the oligarchy there. And they persecuted him all kinds of ways, and then they tried to kill him. They poisoned him, and he wasn't supposed to live, but he survived. And he went into, he was in exile, and he was treated in a hospital. And as soon as he was well enough, he went back to Russia, knowing that he said that that he would be arrested. And when he was, as soon as he landed at the airport, he said, "I know that this will be a life sentence, either my life or the lifespan of the regime." And he said in his journal that's something I think so relevant today. He said that there are lots of brave people, and there are lots of good people, you know, but that doesn't threaten the system as much as people who are afraid, but that they don't give up, you know. And I think that was you know, just by offering his life in that way and dying, you know, I think he was a real witness for martyr. So that was added right at the end, you know.
I'm so glad you included him, and I'm so moved you bring up Paul Farmer and Fred Rogers, both my friends, and Pope Francis, who I think is the greatest pope in history, the most prophetic one. I don't know if you know, but Alexei wrote from prison a private letter smuggled out to my friend Carrie Kennedy saying that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, his whole life was because of Bobby Kennedy being killed, and mm-hmm. he decided to, as a person of faith, to give his life consciously like that. And then they wrote regularly until he was killed. And it was very moving. I've got you.
I have Bobby Kennedy is also in my
is
book.
Is he?
And,
yeah.
And you know our very good friend Jim Douglas has just published this book on the assassinations, the martyrdom of JFK, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy.
And everybody's got to get that book. Yeah.
When I was interviewing him recently, I said, you know, one of the things that's so striking is that all of these people knew that they were on a path that was going to lead to death, and they didn't give up. They went ahead anyway. So all remarkable stories. You know?
Yeah, that gets into, it's not just martyrs, it's witnessing. Gospel witnesses or visionaries. Well, I've got you here, so I want to ask you about Dorothy Day, your great mentor and friend and teacher, whom you've been writing about and keeping alive for over 45 years. And I know it's a big question, but can you just share a few insights with us in the brief time we have, or a memory or two about Dorothy for me, and maybe share a word about the ongoing process of her impending canonization. And my thought, by the way, Robert, I woke up last week, I don't think I told you, but was she's got to become a doctor of the church. She's way beyond being a saint. It's true. She's Teresa of Avila and Catherine of Siena. She's St. Francis and Gandhi combined.
Well, one step at a time.
Okay.
I do think that, you know, that apart from the things that I kind of learned, you know, from Dorothy about the saints and that sort of thing. Yeah, I really, you know, I got to know her when I was very young, 50 years ago that I met her actually in 1975, little knowing that, you know, how much that was going to determine the whole course of my life. I've edited 6 volumes of her writings now. And I have to say that with each of those books that I've edited, I've gotten to know her better. And I think a real, important step along that way for me was the opportunity to edit her diaries, because, you know, even in my case, one tends to think of Dorothy Day or other great saints in terms of these big public things that they did, whether starting a religious order, or the Catholic worker in her case, or House of Hospitality, or being arrested with the farm workers, or going to jail for, you know, protesting civil defense drills. And we sort of focus on those things as if that is what represents the kind of apex of their witness or their holiness. And when I read her diaries, I realized that all of that was rooted in the practice of her kind of very disciplined spiritual life. And by that, I don't mean just that she went to daily Mass and read the Bible every day and said the rosary and recited the office. She was a Benedictine oblate, went on pilgrimages and all those kinds of devotions. But I mean the effort to practice charity, forgiveness, patience in her everyday life. And we think, well, it came easy for her, just as people say, well, Mother Teresa could do those things. I could never do this. She's a saint. And what you see in her diaries is how much that was contrary to her nature. She was very temperamental. She was very judgmental. She was kind of quick to anger. She could hold grudges, all those things. And you see that every day she's going through this examination of conscience and looking at the encounters that she had with people and just the very ordinary tasks of her life, and how she tried to practice the presence of God, and how she tried to practice what she learned from Thérèse of Lisieux, doctor of the church, the little way, a kind of path to holiness that lies in kind of performing all our everyday actions with an awareness and love of God. Now, what Dorothy did, though, was she took that also into a social dimension, because it also led her to believe in the power of small gestures, small protests, the words that we say, the words that we don't say, all of them for positive or good, or negative, that can affect the world around us in ways that we have, no way of seeing. And I really did see how her practice of these things in just small everyday ways kind of prepared her for the heroic things she did on the more public stage. So that is one of the things that I've most come to appreciate. As for the question of holiness, I also see that even as a young person, when Dorothy first learned about saints, she said that she admired the way that they served the poor and the sick. But she said, where were the saints to change the social order? Not just to minister to the slaves, but to do away with slavery. And that's where she takes this great big leap. What other saint ever said that, and who tried to live that, And yes, she performed the works of mercy and she lived in voluntary poverty with the poor, but she was also trying to change the social order. And not just through protesting, but also by offering a kind of critique and offering a model of an alternative way of being and alternative values for our society and trying to live them in the present.
That's so beautiful. Thank you, Robert. Like your father, Daniel Ellsberg, you have followed close the daily events marking, the collapse of our democracy and nation and world, and spoken out vigorously for justice of the poor, and you've been arrested for nuclear disarmament, and doing this and writing books, as well as editing and running Orbis Books, publishing all these great things. So as you study the lives of the saints and our great theologians and voices for justice and peace, in light of this growing fascism and authoritarianism and white supremacy and climate change, what reflections or suggestions do you have from us, from your perspective, as we go forward in this new year, I guess to become saints ourselves, to try to be people who reflect the life of Jesus in this world?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I was very influenced by my father and his example. I think that he is one of the people who kind of pointed me in the direction of really being interested in people who provide a moral witness. My witnessing up close when I was growing up, the story of the Pentagon Papers and his willingness to go to prison for the cause of peace. And I've never been the activist, that he was, or, the single-minded kind of focus on the perils of nuclear weapons and all that kind of thing that he devoted himself to. He did not call himself a person of faith, but he did call himself a person of hope. And he said that's not just optimism that things are going to turn out all right. It's a commitment to live hopefully. That is to say, live in such a way that there is a possibility of changing the world. No guarantees, no certainties, But he said the consequences, the risks are so great that it justifies whatever efforts we put into that. And he was very pessimistic, really, about the fate of the Earth, whether through nuclear war or climate change. The odds, he said, of our survival are very low. But he said that low odds are not no odds. And his own experience showed him that you can never really know what the effect or implications of your actions might be. For example, the big turning point in his life was hearing a young man give a speech where he said he was about to go to prison for resisting the draft. And that like hit my father like a blow. And it made him think, well, what could I do if I were willing to go to prison? That's what led him to release the Pentagon Papers, risk going to prison for the rest of his life. And his own actions in doing that had a kind of unexpected, indirect kind of consequences that he could not possibly have foreseen because of Nixon commissioning the plumbers to go after him and try to destroy him. How would Watergate that actually ended up bringing Nixon down and it helped end the war. So you can see, you know, how these actions of one person, it might be as simple as standing on a street corner with a sign, all these things that make people stop and think, because the system, as you kind of refer to it, tries to make people think that there's nothing you can do about it. It's nothing's going to change. You're powerless. And if it starts with just a few people showing that that's not true, it alerts people to the fact that, there's another way of being. It is possible to do that. And more people perhaps join in. And it kind of shatters this illusion of unanimity or inevitability or immutability in the systems of the world. So, you know, my dad said it would take a miracle for us to survive, but he said that we've witnessed miracles. Maybe we don't call them that, but what do you call the peaceful collapse of the Berlin Wall or the fall of apartheid? All these kinds of things that seemed impossible until they happened. So, you know, he liked to say that, you know, courage is contagious, that the, you know, kind of one light can light another. And that's makes it that a good way to use your life, as all these saints did in one way or another, kind of showing through their own example that there's another way of being. You look in the lives of the saints, you look at someone like Saint Francis, who had this kind of epiphany, and he adopts poverty, and he gives up all of his wealth and his fancy clothes and everything, goes about, you know, helping the poor and the lepers. And he did that with such a kind of spirit of joy that he attracted not just scorn, but wonder. And all these other young men, wealthy young men in Assisi, began giving up all their wealth and going to follow him, you know. And it began to be like a brush fire that swept through Europe, this kind of Franciscan fever. And if you can imagine what it would take for a kind of fever of nonviolence, a fever of hope, a fever of peace, a pandemic of goodness, you know, to just kind of spread. And that's what we're called to be in our own little small way, not to measure the consequences or the extent of that, but to wherever we are in our own little place, among our neighbors, in our own little moment in history, to do what we can to provide that light.
Wow, that is so beautiful. Maybe that's a good way to end, with a beautiful encouragement that we're called to be that too, and to live hopefully like your father and spread the contagion of peace, love, and nonviolence. Thank you so much, Robert Ellsberg, for speaking with me today, and I hope you'll come again and talk with me again someday. Thank you, friends, for listening to the Nonviolent Jesus podcast. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at www.beatitudescenter.org. Please consider leaving a little donation to support this free work. And if you can, please share some positive feedback or review at the National Catholic Reporter or Apple or Spotify or YouTube or Substack or whatever platform you use. And please help spread the word of the Nonviolent Jesus podcast by telling all your friends and fellow church workers. May the God of peace bless you all. Keep on following the Nonviolent Jesus. See you next time, and a very happy new year.